You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm very honored. It's an honor anytime I have the chief executive of a state or former chief executive of a state. And that's who I have today from the great state of Missouri to the south of us. He's former Democratic Governor Jay Nixon. He served two terms as governor, elected in 2008 and 2012. Unlike Iowa and Illinois, Missouri elects its governors the same year as the president, which is a little different. Governor Nixon served two terms. He did very well in both races. We're going to talk about that a little bit, talk about his experiences, how he won, and maybe some advice he can give for the Democratic Party and its struggles right now with the key demographic of working class voters. Governor, thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely, and thank you for focusing on issues like this. Carrying this discussion forward is really important to the people because I feel like we've really disengaged from direct action with the public for what their expectations are of their government and their public servants.
Let me start with some numbers for our listeners. Just hang in there, folks. Governor Jay Nixon was elected 2008, 58% of the vote. Now, right now, we'll get to it. Missouri's ruby red right now, but 58% he won. He won 68 counties. Missouri's got 114. That same year, Barack Obama lost. He won only 9 counties, got 49% of the vote. Very close. I remember that. Missouri was a very competitive state. Governor Nixon was reelected in 2012, 55%, won 44 counties, I think it is. Barack Obama lost. He dropped to 44%, won only 4 counties. Okay. The latest election, Donald Trump won 58%. Harris won only 4 counties. The governor candidate in Missouri got only 39%. What happened? Can you try to crystallize what happened here in those years to cause the fall off so sharply for Democrats?
Well, I'm looking forward to this discussion. I'm glad we have a little long form here because it's not like a true false question. You don't get
yes.
to just say yes and no or whatever. I believe that the politics has changed more than the people of Missouri. The current type of politics, the constant belittling of your opponent, the unwillingness to have substantive policy things you're going to talk about. Instead, it's all politics. The fact that there's unlimited money now in politics, all of those changes and others have caused us to be in a different world than we were in 15 years ago. And I don't think that folks on our side have reacted as well to that. And then you get we should not underestimate this unlimited contributions situation too, because with resources, it makes a difference. If I feel especially jumpy about that, Robin, it's because I argued at the U.S. Supreme Court, Nixon v. Schrink, that upheld campaign contribution limits all throughout the country for candidate committees. So there is a path forward if folks want to get back to a much more rational contribution method. But that's a long answer. You're a journalist. You'll hone in and make me uncomfortable here soon, I hope.
I mean, I think it's not just Missouri. Let's face it; it's all across the country, where especially rural counties have fallen off. And I do want to ask you about that. But I mean, the change has been so dramatic, and we saw this in Iowa too. Iowa was a purple state, and it's gone ruby red. You say that the politics changed, but the people are the same.
Robin, I didn't say they were the same. There's clearly been changes, and the Democratic brand has moved to the left also. When you look at and the fact that there's so many attacks and so much money now in the ads, they've been able to define the Democrats as opposed to the Democrats being able to define themselves nationally. And that has that has an effect in states like Iowa and Missouri for sure.
That's exactly what we're hearing in these rural areas. I mean, some of these counties, the Republican candidate gets 70 or 80% of the vote. And that was unheard of in previous elections. But here's something, too, for our listeners. In statewide referenda, going back to 2018, here's what voters in Missouri have voted for. And think in your mind whether this is conservative or liberal, progressive. They voted against a right-to-work measure in 2018. Missouri voters voted for Medicaid expansion in 2020. They voted for legalized pot in 22. They voted for the right to choose abortion rights referendum in 24 and a higher minimum wage in 24. That doesn't sound very conservative to me. How do you explain voters voting for these policies that are more progressive, but yet they won't vote for a candidate that backs them with a D behind their name?
Well, I told you your questions were going to get harder, and that's one of them. That's why I continue to say the politics, the how you run, how people are viewed as a Democrat or Republican or as a candidate, that has changed more than the underlying positions on issues. Missourians support the minimum wage. Missourians support labor unions. Missourians, quite frankly, I couldn't get Medicaid expansion done in the 8 years I was governor. It was only a ballot proposal that got that done subsequently. But even though we weren't able to get Medicaid expansion passed during the 8 years that I was governor, I expanded just by managing it better, healthcare for over 147,000 kids by working on the system to make sure everybody that was could get it got it. So I think these are challenging long-term things, but if the Democrats just want to play like the Republicans and say bad things about the other people, I think we'll also continue to lose. I think you've got to lay out a framework of where you're going. I believe that when people go to vote, they pause for a second, they look down at the names. They don't, at least when I was running, people thought about what that person would do if they were in, not what they had done before you got to put the X in there. And if we can get changed to that, back to that in a substantive way, and I think there's some really good issues too for the Democrats. I mean, the cost of utilities are rising, and it's clearly reasons. We have water quality issues that are really problematic because of that US Supreme Court case, and not a single Republican has done anything to replace the over 100,000, excuse me, 100 million acres that were taken out of the Clean Water Act by that decision. So I think there's plenty of things to run on and be successful. The other thing is that information moves really fast now, and I'm reminded of, well, the bottom line is politics and the mechanics of it has changed. And the Republicans have adopted that more, I think, in the political strategy part, the political execution, maybe not the strategy, but the execution, than the Democrats have today. But I feel like we're moving forward.
You think the party, the big difference is that the party perhaps isn't as attuned to issues affecting the working class? I mean, a lot's been written about this realignment where working class voters, a key demographic, have shifted over to the Republicans, and more those with degrees, college degrees, have shifted more to the Democrats. Have we kind of lost, is the party lost its way a little bit with the
Well,
working
the
class
switch
race?
you're talking about is very clear. When I got into politics, the more education you had, the more money you had, you're a Republican. Now, the more education you have, you're a Democrat. That's a pretty big shift. When you look at PhDs and masters and all of that sort of stuff, it's not total, but it has shifted across the constituency that votes has changed somewhat, and the younger voters. Have not been completely consistent yet in what their opinions are. And I think that's another area where I think the Democrats can make some real progress if they get after. I mean, and you talk about the working folks, my state senate district, when I ran for state senate in 1986, I'm successful there. That's where around St. Louis, south of St. Louis, but it's where the people that work construction and work other union jobs live. I mean, I carried a union card for 7 years. I mean, I know these people. I worked with them. They're my friends, and they were very good at what they do. Those folks have slipped away from us, but they voted for me, and I haven't changed that much. So I think that if you present yourself, and the other thing, I think Democrats have gotten addicted to this internet fundraising stuff where they just send out an email and then get a few checks back from South Dakota or Santa Barbara or something. I didn't mind the old-fashioned way, and I know we went out every weekend. We had 12 events. And I was leading guys of our small donor events. I always believed that if a voter or elector gave you $5, they were investing in you, and they were more of a supporter than somebody that just says, "Yeah, I'll vote for you," in a sense. And they were connected. They had bought into the program. So we were maniacs on the small donor stuff in person, direct with them. And I think that's a much better way to present small donor events than just turning around and pushing send on an email.
I remember, I'm old enough to remember doing some of those events too for candidates back in the 80s. And five, 10, $25, but you could raise a lot of money because that's all people could afford. And they would show up and participate. Well, they can't afford to drop $1,000 on an event like a lot of events are now.
But I tell you, once they give that 5 or 10 or 25, they're as invested in you as somebody that's giving you 1,000. I'll tell you that. They watch you and they are supportive. The example I used down in Howell County in West Plains, Missouri, down in the south part of the state, I carried that in 2008, first time the Democrats carried it since Reconstruction. And I think one of the reasons we did, the day before the election, I had an event down there. We built it up over a long period of time, a lot of trips and all that sort of stuff. But we had 356 paid people at an event for a Democrat in that county, the Sunday before the Tuesday election. And most of those people, about 70%, were previous donors. They were coming back for more, small, but coming back for more. So I think that the engagement of the electorate is also very, very important. Right now, it seems like the candidates are distanced from them in many, many ways. So that's another thing I think the Democrats can really do a better job of. Republicans too, for that matter.
I think you're right. I mean, it's just easy to send these emails out to get $5 or $10. Bernie Sanders raised a prolific amount of money, but yet I think you're making a big point that personal contact is just more important to get a more deeper connection with a voter, to not only vote but put a yard sign up and maybe get more engaged. It's old-fashioned campaigning.
My wife gives me trouble for this, Robin, but every campaign I ever ran, every memo that went out said how many days till election. Because I got sick and tired of people coming up to me and saying, well, if I had another week, I could have won. Well, hell, they put the election, you know when it's going to be. You know, it's right there. And so people that work for me in my campaigns, the first memo that we had when I was running for governor was over 1,000. It was like 1,019 or something like that. So we were 3 years out and still working it. But that level of intensity is necessary, also a combined intensity for the task at hand, which is extremely simple, which is get to the electorate and go vote. The other thing that Democrats, I think, need to do is take more people to vote with them. I know this sounds like some old ward guy or whatever, but I used to always say at the end of my speeches during election year to our Democrats, I would say, remember, and I've been attorney general, I've been a prosecutor, polling places are extremely dangerous places. You should never go alone. Take people from your neighborhood, take all these people. And we really worked to match people up, especially younger voters. We were a maniacs about trying to get an older person to take somebody for their first time they voted so that they would remember it, take a picture and talk to them and all that sort of stuff. Go pick them up, even if they're 18 years old and you're 70. But things like that, the mechanics of an actual ground campaign over a period of time can and do make a difference. It's not just TV ads. And it's not just image. You got to go get the votes.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, on Heartland Politics. And my guest today is the former governor of the great state of Missouri, Jay Nixon. Or, as a lot of my parents and my grandmother used to call it, Missouri. I always thought that's interesting how you pronounce the name of the state.
Well,
But,
that was so interesting that my first day of the state, when I did it, they put a counter on the TV underneath to see how many times I said Missouri and how many times I said Missouri. And I was like 56% Missouri and 44% Missouri. But if you go back in history, one of the reasons you folks up north think of it as Missouri is that Little Dixie in Missouri was counties north of the Missouri River, not south. So when you go to Pike County, Lincoln County, Louisiana, Missouri, places like that, those folks were coming from Kentucky and Louisiana. And so the Missouri is a very complex and difficult state to understand, but we're like seven different states.
That's right. We've talked a
Also,
little
I believe
so.
the only governor ever on the same day, literally the same day as governor, to sign an emergency declaration for a flood and a drought, same day. You know, you got these big diverse states. You got a lot going on, and you got these seven media markets, which make it, you got to burn the leather and you got to get out there because with seven media markets, if you do something in Cape Girardeau in the South, nobody in Maryville or in St. Joe is going to know about it. If you do something in Joplin, they won't even know the people in Springfield will know about it. So work matters. That's the other thing I tell candidates. Work matters.
That's a great message. Bill Clinton famously won in 92, and the slogan was, "It's the economy, stupid." There's a school of thought that Democrats can't just depend on economic issues. That what's really hurting them are these cultural issues. And to be specific, crime and the talk of defund the police hurt. The transgender issues and border issues, especially when under the Biden administration. Do you think that's right, that there are the construction people you know would want to vote for Democrats but and throw guns in, that economically we're okay, the Democrats are okay, but we're not okay maybe on the
I think we
cultural
have to
issues?
be able to admit where we disagree with what's happened with our party. And having 50,000 people come across an open border for the better part of 6 or 4 years is insane. Yeah, I mean, I remember Obama's Homeland Security, Jay Johnson, going down to the and saying, no, we want to have secure borders. We got to have secure borders. So I think some issues like that where policy decisions were made for the wrong reason. I believe a number of folks, the Democratic Party, in essence, were soft on immigration because they thought it would help them with the Hispanic vote, but the Hispanics that were voting were already here and they were already
Right.
registered to vote, and they weren't all that excited about people that didn't follow the rules making it in. So I think we missed I wasn't there. I always felt like you have secure borders. That's the other thing that's been challenging to see as a hard state in the middle of the country. When I was elected governor in 2008, every state that touched me touched us here in Missouri. Had a Democrat governor, Culver up in your area, even Arkansas with Beebe, Oklahoma, Drew Edmondson. When I left 8 years later, Missouri was the last Democrat. No other Democrats. So I have seen it. Maybe I'm not as insightful as I should be, but I have lived through what the questions you're asking.
What? Okay. So, how did you campaign in rural areas? Good Lord, you won. What I counted 68 in the first election, 44 in the second. I mean, that's people. There's candidates that would beg for that now. But how, did you take a different approach? Did you talk different issues? What was your strategy when you got out of St. Louis and Kansas City with
Well, I had the
rural
same.
Missouri?
When you run for governor, you got to have the same message everywhere. Your presence means something in those areas, but you can't go to one media market and say one thing, go to another. You guys in the media will catch us at that stuff very easily. So it's the same message. I think that's the other thing people don't understand. They think you have a different message to people who live in my hometown of DeSoto than you do the people who live in North City or in Kansas City. That's not true. You've got to have a message that sells 50.1. Quite frankly, I think 60.1 is what you ought to aim for. But this is people have to feel a connection with the candidate. And if you get that feeling, it doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican, they know you. So I think some of the personal stuff, if you get on the internet and look at the first ad I ran as governor for governor, it's called DeSoto. It's a little bio ad, 60-second bio ad, still out there somewhere. We were connecting directly to the values of my hometown, walking with my family out of church. Going to the football field where I played, going to the schools where my mom was a teacher. Connecting into these communities and the people of these communities, I think is a powerful, powerful political tool. So how did I do it? I don't, I worked really, really hard and we tried to be organized about it. And I really felt like if I had a chance to meet someone and talk to them, that they would vote for me. I just have that belief. And so the more people I met and the more people I talked to, the more votes I would get. And you could see the polling numbers shift a little bit as you would go they talk about in the presidential, the media markets. I saw it in ours. And I remember my last race as attorney general, my second to last race as attorney general, I lost a county in the South that just kind of irked me. And I said, I'm not going to lose that again. Okay. Down by Doniphan, Missouri. So we did every, we just, I put five trips on it. We went down there and did it. And so it shows you can get these votes. They're not impossible to get, but you've got to escape the national brand. And that's true of both parties now. By the time we get to a next election, you're going to have Republicans saying, no, I didn't say I hate my enemies. I go to church on Sundays. No, I don't think we should. I think we should require warrants if people go to people's houses to break into them if they've got a badge on. Things like that are going to be equally as hard for the other side to carry. As some of the stuff has been for us. And that's why I think it's doubly important for the Democrats to lay out what they think is a clear vision that is separate from what the Republicans are. I'm not a big tariff guy, for example. I don't know why we want to tax people with charging more for their products. I don't see that as an economic. And I should note, China's trade has gone up because of this. They've set an all-time record. So I think that on the substance, we've got some really solid issues. You just have to develop them too, and you have to repeat them, and you have to listen. That's the other thing about the Democrats sometimes, and Republicans. They spend more time talking than listening. And I think it's last year at the beginning of the year, I make a phrase that I'm going to have for the year, the kind of my thought for the year. Last year, 2024. Excuse me, 2025. My thought for the year was listen more, talk less. So I got to December of this year and I said to my wife, what do you think my phrase ought to be for next year? She said, I think you ought to try that one you had for another year. So I think that all of us need to listen more. We really do. We need to
Right.
hear, not just listen, but hear what people are saying. Because sometimes the words don't explain it as much. What's the old adage? Communication is 90% nonverbal. It's like us. We're on Zoom here. We're seeing our faces as we're talking. And so I think there's real opportunities here. I really do. I'm long-term very optimistic.
So to recap, a candidate, young candidate coming up to you running for the first time in a rural area says, Governor, what can I do to win out here? It's show up, work hard, communicate, listen. That's the main things. Just
Don't
be
get your
there and
values
work hard.
away. The other thing I ask everybody that's running, whatever office they're running for, how many votes do you need to get to win? What is a number that if you got, there's no way you could lose? Look at the last 10 elections. You tell me what that win number is, and every day you build toward it. Every person you shake, that counts as one. Put them on your list and stay in contact with them. You got to work it. I think people, they get obsessed with this poll stuff. Polls just represent what real people are. You got to get into the real people. So I think there's some real narrow, clear ways to reconnect, bottom line.
I'm going to probably get you in trouble with this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I'm curious. You're a winning two-term governor in a state that's turned red. It was close in Obama's first election. Hasn't been since then statewide. But yet again, voters have voted for all these more left-leaning policies at the, in referendums. Have people, is anybody nationally or state candidates reached out to you and said, Governor, what do we need to do to win over these key demographics of working class voters, rural
Yes,
voters?
I've talked to a number of people. I mean, I don't think it's overly organized, but I was always a little bit, I'm pretty conservative. So it's not like AOC is going to run into my office and ask me to help her on something, and that sort of stuff. But yeah, people reach out and I talk to them, but I made a decision when I got done with politics. My wife and I said we were going to have our 30-30-30 plan. It was 30 when we got married. 30 years of public service and 30 years of something else. So I'm really trying to return back into a human being, to define myself by my values and my performance, not by what people think of it. When you're a politician, you're dealing with reactions to what your position is. I want to be who I am. And so I haven't changed that much, but I do think it gives me a luxury. And this is the first significant interview on politics I've done since I've been out. I mean, I just don't do them. And so you're the test model. If I can survive this, I might get more involved. I don't know.
Well, we're not done yet, so
I know. I know. You got to be tough. I appreciate that.
Well, I'm just again, you think it's doable for Democrats to come back and get these working class and rural voters, and you've kind of laid out how to do that.
You want
So
to lose them to the billionaires? They're gonna go with billionaires rather than working people. I think they're gettable.
okay, I've got some time left here. I want you to kind of handicap some of the people talking about running for president. You've just talked about how the Democrats need to be able to compete better and given some good advice on how to get these voters that are tough, the working class voters that have slipped away, rural America, which just has gone heavily for the Republicans. What candidates do you think right now running for president among the names out there do you think are best positioned to do that?
The one I'm closest to, this most position, well position, I think, is Governor Beshear of Kentucky. I served with his father, and I know the family. I know him. I know him. He was Attorney General also before that. I think he's very. One of the things I like about him is his faith is not insincere. And I think that especially the way that the other side has tried to capture religion on their side, if you can't break it away with the stuff that that the guy at the top is doing and the way he talks and the way he lives his life, then you're not going to get him. So I think Andy is good. I like him a lot. I'm not endorsing here or anything like that. So I put him at a level. I think Whitmer is somebody that also brings a real. I like the governors. I've been one. Unlike the senators, governors, make choices, have to make choices and have to upset people when they cut their part of the budget or whatever. So I look towards the governors. I think Newsom's got a lot of talent. I can't see people in Missouri being especially excited about anything from California. They stole our football team. What the heck, we, it's so I think his background, I can't exactly figure out why he was married to Kimberly Guilfoyle either, but that's a whole separate kettle of fish. But I think he's got some challenges. I think Klobuchar is a good candidate, people like that. So I'm looking for centrists that want to get things done. And the others don't interest me that much.
Okay. Well, that's a good that's a good way to end things up. You've diagnosed the problem, looked back at it, talked about your successes, and given some advice on how to overcome the current challenges, and then kind of handicap some of the candidates. So that's all good. I had forgotten about stealing the football team. So that's yeah. Yeah,
I'm
Newsom
sorry I
better stay
mentioned
away.
it.
Yeah, no,
I should have shut up.
yeah, that's good. Those issues sometimes are more important than the more popular issues.
Yeah,
So, you know.
I tend to, I'm a big hunt. I hunt and I fish and all that sort of stuff. And people just don't realize. I know we're out of time, but those when you connect on the first day of gun deer season in Missouri, 500,000 people before the sun comes up are sitting in stands or sitting somewhere looking. And we're a pop. At that time, we had 6 minutes. You got 8% of the people are out there. I was in that 8% every year and have been for a lot of years. It's those connections, I think, those legitimate connections that exist in you as a human being prior to the time you run for office and are legitimate feelings you have about what you want to do that I think are a magic sauce that gets people to trust you and to want to go with you. The other thing, we got to be in a good mood. What's the old number one rule of leadership? People follow people who appear to know where they're going and are having a good time doing it. So I think the smiling candidates that are they're tough. I'm not saying be weak. I just think we're going to enter a new era of politics. This is the stuff we're in right now is basically unreal. I mean, unlimited money, attacks all the time, all this fights about two members of the House or two members of the Senate. Will they buck this or buck that? That stuff has lost its interest to the public out here. It's like a parlor game of a bunch of politicians in D.C. So I think that the people that get the substance and get to a clearer vision. Democrats and Republicans are going to have great success in front of the electorate.
That's a great thought. That who knows? Our politics could be back to the future. More campaigning that was done traditionally in the past, and less of this technology and EV and all that. And I think that would be welcome. But that's encouraging words from my guest today on Heartland Politics, former Missouri Governor Jay Nixon. Hey, Governor, it's been an honor. Thank you, and I'd love to have you back sometime.
Sure. Thank you, Robin, and thanks for being interested in this.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.